You can now take KRBN Internet News Talk Radio with you on your mobile phone, as we are making it easier to listen to the great hosts here on KRBN, including our very own West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. It's free and available on Google Play. Just look for player.fm. That's player.fm and search for KRBN.
Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Boz Knows Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. And now, here's Jay.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of the Boz Knows Show. And I'm your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich, and we're coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira, Oregon. And I've moved the show outside because it's another beautiful afternoon in the Pacific Northwest. So just, I'm out on the back patio here, and of course, I've got Piper the Poodle bringing me her ball because I usually throw for her out here. And she's confused why I'm sitting out here and not playing ball. But, we got a lot to talk about today on the Boz Knows Show. But, I always like to talk about what you want to talk about. So all you have to do is give us a call here on the Boz Knows Show at 646-721-9887. And just press 1, and that lets us know you want to get on a conversation, because I do have people that call the show just to listen on their cell phones. and so that makes us know, puts a little question mark up there so we know you want to talk. So even if you're listening and you hear something you want to chime in on or ask a question about me, while you're listening, if you press 1 on your keypad, that'll throw that question mark up there for us. So again, it's 646-721-9887, and just press 1 so Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, knows you want to get on the show. And I can hear one of my neighbors working on an engine. Hope that's not coming over the show live. That's part about living out here in the country. People do work on their own cars. So all sorts of things to talk about. We had our first listening session on race and equity at the board last night, and had a grand total of 3 people want to talk to us. Was really expecting to be there half the night listening. Was rather surprised because we're sure getting more than 3 people at the protest around town. This is their opportunity to talk directly to their elected officials, and we didn't get anyone showing up. But I want to go back to the topic I talked about last week quite a bit on the show, and just talk about what actually happened in the e-board on Monday. And, I have to give it to Senator Betsy Johnson. She had one of the best quotes that I've heard in a long time, that most people think PGE stands for Portland Gets Everything, when she was referring to just, basically when it comes to public services and their share of state services and everything else. That's kind of the attitude of everyone that doesn't live in the Portland metro area in Oregon, is that Portland gets everything. And the emergency board basically confirmed that they had the opportunity to fix the COVID relief fund problem that has, just folks in Portland getting $174 per person up front last April and May, where we're having to beg for being reimbursed here in Lane County, and that we've actually only gotten a commitment of $27 per person here in Lane County for being reimbursed, where we have to spend the money up front. And that disparity continues, because the emergency board, even though they had the opportunity to maybe divert what they were going to spend on PPE, quote, on our behalf, they chose to spend $105 million course, through the Department of Administrative Services, which is basically handing the governor a slush fund of money that was meant to come to local governments outside the Portland metro area. Although I should say Clackamas County is included in the folks that got cheated out of COVID relief funds because they have less than a half million population in Clackamas County. So you've got Washington County and Multnomah County and Portland that got all that money, over $170 per person. Poor Clackamas County is having to beg to be reimbursed from the state for any money. Just right next door. Now you kind of wonder, where do most of the Democrat votes come from in this state? Might be Portland and Multnomah and Washington counties. Clackamas is kind of a swing county. Can kind of go Republican sometimes. Most of the rest of the counties. You kind of wonder if this is part of the governor's revenge is best served slow, you know, over the whole cap and trade debacle. You know, are we seeing that, you know, this is how they're going to basically strangle resources from the areas of the state that didn't support her desire to cap, tax, and spend our energy in this state. But, you know, so they chose to go ahead and spend that $105 million on personal protective equipment, something that FEMA has actually said they'll 75% reimburse if local governments are buying it. You know, so we're not sure if that kind of blows our 75% reimbursement. You know, it's like they're spending money out of one bucket that might be being reimbursed out of another. So they haven't even gotten an answer to that question, but they went ahead and allocated it because damned if they're going to let any money go down to local governments that the state can hang on to. And I'm really disappointed in some of our local representatives and senators that are on the e-board that even though, like Senator Manning that spoke out the e-board session before and voted against this $105 million, flipped his vote and voted for it. And I'm guessing that he heard, you know, he's going to lose committee assignments or something. The pressure was put on him. I have to say cheers to Senator Betsy Johnson for her integrity and voting against it. You know, spoke out against it and voted against it, whereas I heard Senator Manning speak out against it and then vote for it, which I just don't get. Never heard Senator Roblin from, you know, that covers the Florence area of my district, speak out against it and just went ahead and voted for it. So all you folks over in Florence, if you, you know, when we don't have the local money, and mind you, some of that would come directly to the city of Florence, that COVID relief funds, and even Dune City would get some of that. Siusla Valley Fire District would get some of that. West Lane Ambulance District would get some of that. You know, those funds that you know are supposed to go to local governments, they're talking about right down to the special district level that your state senator voted to keep in state coffers. Along with that, Representative Paul Hovey, who represents South Eugene and all the way out in Veneta, voted to keep that money in state coffers rather than have it come to the city of Eugene, the city of Veneta, the Fern Ridge Library District, Lane Fire Authority. You know, and you know, it just amazes me, you know, that these folks, you know, are so intent on hanging on to those funds to try and prop up the state's budget at the cost of all these local government budgets. And requiring us to jump through a million hoops to get money and put out the money up front. Portland actually got their money in April and May and were able to allocate it. And to give you an idea of how much they got $114 million with very few strings attached. basically just had to spend it in accordance with the federal guidelines that came with the CARES Act, which allows it to be spent on everything from economic development and broadband to housing to actual COVID response and public health. If we were getting the same amount of funding here, we basically have 60% of Portland's population. So we would be getting about 60% of these dollar amounts would be coming into Lane County. They were able to spend $58.5 million on household assistance, housing, and homeless assistance, i.e. rent assistance and other assistance like that, and expanding their homeless services, because one of the things that COVID did was it basically a lot of the ways we house the homeless are group settings, and a lot of them had to reduce capacity by 50% or more to maintain all the 6-foot distancing and everything necessary to adhere to the governor's COVID restrictions. So suddenly you need twice as much housing for the homeless. That costs money. Portland, if we were getting our 60% of Portland's 58.5 million, think of what we could be doing for folks for rental assistance and housing and household support here in Lane County. They were able to put $15 million into small business assistance, which would be about $9 million or so in Lane County. Think of what we could be doing for small businesses here with $9 million. I mean, we put, early on, we put $250,000 out there for small business grants. It was gone in less than 24 hours. Think what we could do with $9 million to help people. And then they kind of helped their schools out by they put $3.5 million to bridge some of the digital divide and help with broadband and all that for students in the Portland area. Now, mind you, Portland got a lot of broadband services available already. It's not like Lane County where there's areas you can't get internet, period, because you live on the north side of a hill out in the country where there isn't any cable service and there isn't DSL. You can't see a satellite. So they're getting to spend $3.5 million to bridge their digital divide. It wouldn't have been nice if we could have gotten an equitable amount here. They even spent $4.4 million on arts and culture support. And in addition to that, they spent $30 million on direct response, public health, and their actual COVID response. $114 million. If we were, being equitably funded, we'd be close to $70 million we'd be getting here. But you know what? We've gotten promised to date on a reimbursement with a lot of strings attached so far, $7.5 million, 10% of what we should be getting here in Lane County. I'm almost ready to tell, to cue up the I'm mad as hell thing, because it still makes me mad. I mean, in this time where we're holding listening sessions on equity and race, how the state government can take a federal bill that was so clearly disposed to have 45% of the money go to local governments and hang on to it for their own purposes and have such an inequity set up in their state, where the largest, most populous area that has the most money in local government. Multnomah County and Washington County, in their per capita budgets, far exceed Lane County and Eugene. They're just flush with money compared with us, because they didn't have the historic timber support that we had here locally, that we, prior to Measure 5, kept our property taxes so low that we got locked in by Measure 5, that once we lost that timber revenue, left us in such a dry spell for revenue. They don't have that up there. Their budgets, per capita just far outstrip ours, yet they're allowing those folks to get even more through this COVID relief fund, and they're starving these rural areas that they've starved through their anti-business policies that restrict our timber harvests, that, you know, are impacting our ability to, you know, have a profitable agricultural and fishing industry in this state, and trying to turn us to a pure tourism economy. And then the COVID comes around and kills our tourism economy. And yet they're going to starve the parts of the state that they've told to be dependent on tourism from the relief funds that would help us. You know, something's got to change. People have to keep after those e-board members. You know, let Senator Roblin, Senator Manning, and Representative Holvey, if you're living in Lane County, know you're disappointed with them and they need to change and fix it the next time the e-board meets. We still haven't gotten a good accounting of how the state spent their 55% of that funding. You know, yet they're lobbying the 45%. So really disappointed in the e-board, and really hope, you know, that, you know, when they get together again, maybe they can fix some of this and stop having to make us apply for reimbursement, allocate it as upfront funds so we don't have to come up with the funds later, because that way we know we can set up a program and spend the money rather than being afraid of spending down our reserves, which are limited, in the hopes that maybe the state's going to reimburse us later. But when you're talking about $170 per person and we're less than $30 per person, something's got to change. Portland should not get everything. You know, if you wonder why people are signing recall petitions, Kate, this is one of the reasons. You've got to be fair and equitable across the state, particularly when you're dealing with federal money. I mean, we all know what a wonderful record the state has with federal money. Can we say cover Oregon? How much did you waste trying to set up an insurance exchange that failed with federal money? How about the $80 million you got to fix the unemployment system 10 years ago? What happened to that $80 million? Oh, yeah, you never spent it. And you're worried about whether or not local governments can spend our money in time and do the right thing with it? Are you projecting or something, you know, your own self-image onto the local government? I'm really disappointed, and I really hope the e-board hears from the public outside the Portland metro area. In fact, if you're in Portland, you should be mad about this inequity. If you're out there in the streets protesting inequities in our and some kind of institutionalized inequities, here we have an equity being institutionalized at this moment. In Oregon, we should be, you know, in the streets protesting this. But, you know, I'm going to pause and maybe get off that topic for a bit, because it does get the blood up, and we'll move on to some of what the board's been doing, because we were met from 9 o'clock in the morning to about 6:30, almost 7 o'clock in the evening yesterday, and there's a lot to talk about. And I've had meetings most of the day today that we can talk about, too. I was involved in the State Emergency Response Commission's meeting this morning for a couple hours. I was in the Homes for Good board meeting this afternoon for a couple hours leading up to this meeting. You know, this is my fourth, I think, meeting on, you know, a Zoom sort of meeting. This one's not quite Zoom, Facebook Live, but still, it seems like I talk to a computer for a living now, all day long. And we'll get to some of that, but I want to pause and remind folks, the number to call in is 646-721-9887. Just press 1 if you want to get on the conversation. We want to talk about the COVID relief funding and disparities across this state, or anything else on your mind, we'll talk about it. So I'm going to kind of move into yesterday's board meeting because there's a lot to talk about there. You know, we started out basically with our usual COVID update. And I just want to say, you know, we've had a particular resident that has been throwing stones at our staff since this whole thing started, and throwing stones at Lane County, complaining we're not doing enough testing when we don't have any control of testing because we don't own any labs. Lane County doesn't. And a lot of the testing limitations were supply chain limitations from overseas that we could not control. So it's aggravating to watch somebody constantly criticize. And this person has the ear of one commissioner who constantly kind of regurgitates his criticisms in board meetings. And a couple weeks back, the big thing got to be is, what is Lane County's response plan? Do we have a written plan? Do we see the plan? It's like, I've served in incident command systems. And, you know, the incident command systems, or ICS, were invented by wildland firefighters and have been adopted by emergency managers and governments across the U.S. In fact, you almost have to have it to get FEMA reimbursement for an emergency. Nowadays, it's really a great system of responding to an incident. And the incident can be tiny and small and just involve one or two people in the command structure. Or it can be as huge as responding to COVID. You know, it was intended in the firefighters' realm of wildland firefighting to be able to deal with a fire that starts out as a half-acre lightning strike and sometimes may get put out at a half-acre, and tracking that and making sure that all the resources that were assigned return, you know, that if you send a crew out, a hand crew out, that everyone that was on the hand crew gets back in, you know, to a huge fire like some of the ones down in the Calmeopsis in the last couple of years, you know, where they've got thousands of people involved in firefighting, and you're having to make sure that, you know, you don't leave somebody out there, you know, and that you're coordinating all that attack. And you know, as the weather conditions change, you change your plan of attack. And I understand as part of that ICS system, that one, as you start expanding to a larger and larger incident, one of the first things that gets set up is what they have different sections. And one of them's, you know, like logistics and, you know, operations, which is where the actual, you know, firefighters are in the firefighting situation. And then there's a planning section that gets set up. And they're the ones that do the daily situation reports, taking all that information, and they're responsible for maintaining an incident action plan. Now, we stood up our ICS and our Emergency Operations Center back in early February. So from the day we stood that up, we started developing an incident action plan and have maintained one throughout this entire emergency. Yet people that don't understand ICS, you know, we're like, well, where's your plan? It's like, yes, we have a plan. In fact, at that point in time, it was 32 pages long, but it's written in the jargon of incident management and the technical jargon of public health. So it's not easily digestible maybe by the public. So, you know, we don't just put it on our website, and it does even also contain some information that we're allowed to keep private because you don't, you know, it's information that would compromise our ability to respond. So, you know, this complaint that we didn't have a plan was kind of, for me, a silly complaint. I knew we had a plan, and anyone that understood incident command systems knew we had a plan. So what it forced our staff to spend time doing is one particular constituent of one particular commissioner to write something up in the way that the public could understand it and produce it on our website, which isn't a bad thing, but it's just an extra added piece of work for our structure that's trying to respond to the actual emergency. But yeah, we've done amazing here in Lane County. And when you really think about some of what we've done in the way of response, we are at over 10% of the total tests given in the state, yet we're only 9% of the population. So the complaints about we're not doing enough testing, we've managed still to do more testing than the average around the state. You know, because we've been very aggressive in working with partnerships and helping the U of O get, and getting local labs set up that wouldn't normally do disease testing. Yeah. But, it's pretty amazing what we've been able to do when it comes to our COVID response, even despite the fact we've been starved for resources by the state. You can imagine what we'd be doing if we were getting our fair share of COVID relief funds. I don't go there. I've already spent enough time there. But I just want to say our staff has done an amazing job. We're well below the state averages in everything from cases per 100,000, hospitalizations per 100,000, deaths per 100,000, all well below. Our percentage of positive tests are well below the state average. The state's over 5%. We're down at 1.7%. We are managing even without the resources we should be getting from the federal government through the state, we are managing this pandemic really well in Lane County. And part of that is you out there. You guys are doing a good job, social distancing, doing what you should do. Just same thing for fighting the common flu. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, cover your cough. Common courtesy sort of things. But, so we got our COVID, update there. Spent a little time on that. Kind of moved on to a report on our youth services system. And the report was about something called RED, which is, racial and ethnic disparities in our juvenile justice system. It was done based on a critical race theory lens. And that sounds like a whole bunch of buzzword gobbledygook to most people that don't deal with this on a daily basis or aren't in an HR or equity sort of job. So let me break some of this down for you. So racial and ethnic disparities in the juvenile justice system is pretty easy to understand. It's basically just looking at what is the background population demographics by race and ethnicity, and then what is that same breakdown in that actually are, referred to our juvenile justice system, and then also how far they move through the juvenile justice system. How many, after diversion, how many are left in the system? How many actually end up being referred for incarceration later? And what those percentages are. One of the things I can say is because the population of minorities are so low in this area, that quite often once you start working your way down that list, past diversion, all that, we can't track because there's not enough numbers to make a percentage work. So it kind of blows that out. But when you look at just the incoming, there is a disparity. There are more people of color and minority ethnicities coming into our juvenile justice system than we have background percentage in our population. And what this study determined, though, was that influx is something we can't control in our juvenile justice system of Lane County. And that once they're in there, we are doing really well with trying to make sure that as we move down in the system, we're not increasing that in any way and doing our best to divert those folks and treating them well, with the proper sensitivity and understanding of their experiences. What it basically said was that disparity exists because of what happens in the household or as before they ever get to us, because of the societal issues with racism and prejudice that cause trauma and other issues of poverty that lead to the adverse childhood experiences that lead to being in contact with the juvenile justice system. And that's something we don't have direct control over in our juvenile justice system, but maybe we can have impact on in some of our social service systems, which we have, and I've talked about it before, about how important it is to prevent adverse childhood experiences. One of the reasons why I've been so supportive of the whole 15th night movement of trying to keep kids off the street and out of homelessness, because if they're on the street for more than 2 weeks, they're much more likely to suffer, all sorts of traumas that will lead to long-term homelessness and long-term contact with the criminal justice system in general as adults. And, we need to prevent that. So it's one of the ways of turning off the pipeline of adults is to get to the kids and get to the kids even younger. That's why I support, things like the relief nursery, birth to three, and some of these supports for parents, and including some of the great programs like Pearl Buck's preschool program for children of parents that may have developmental disabilities, to help those kids not experience a lot of adverse childhood experiences. So there's all sorts of programs out there we can support, but they're not part of our criminal youth services system or juvenile justice system. So kind of was, an hour spent hearing, there's problems, but they're not something that's part of your system, which was kind of interesting to hear. But the interesting part to me was the whole idea of this critical race theory and critical race theory lens. And, you can Google it and come up with it. The interesting thing is that it's dependent not on any sort of objective data, like the theory of relativity or, other, theories that you think about. It's based on narrative and what they call counter-narrative of the minorities. And we are supposed to listen to the stories of people of color and ethnic minorities and do so without judgment and accepting them as their truth. And I get part of that, but it's also, one of those things that's, counterintuitive in some ways and can lead to some false conclusions. You need to test some of those stories too and have some objective data about stories, because we saw during the Me Too movement that, sometimes blindly accepting stories can lead to poor conclusions and also poor judgments about situations. So we need to prove some of those with objective and have the ability to make sure. Sorry, I dropped something when the wind blew there, and a little bit of dog helped with that. But that's some of my and one of the big proponents of this. Is basically, one of his stories basically was that if alien space traders came to the United States and offered gold for us to sell them all to black people, for them to use as either food or work or slave labor, that the white majority would do so. And I just don't accept that. You know, I wouldn't sell my, the guy that was my roommate, Robert Frierson, in college to Alien. I wouldn't sell the two gentlemen that were my wedding attendants at my wedding, Coy Thomas and Ron Wilson, to Alien for gold. Yeah. It just doesn't jive very well. But I don't know how much dog noise is coming in. But Louis speaks. He also has some criticisms of critical race theory, too. But, you know, that kind of leads into the evening listening session a little bit that we had. And that was generated from our resolution that we made supporting the concept, not the organization, that Black Lives Matter, and that we were going to do whatever was necessary to root out any institutionalized racism in Lane County government. And, you know, that was in response to the folks that were, you know, protesting and asking for that. And we chose to, as an action to that, rather than just, passing a resolution and signaling our virtues, we wanted to make sure we had actions attached. One of the reasons why I voted for it, set up listening sessions to look for and have input on where we might make some corrections if there is any institutionalized racism in Lane County government. And last night, was not only our evening public comment for just any public comment, general public comment, but it was our listening session specifically for the board of commissioners to listen to anyone who wanted to talk to us about equity and racism and institutionalized racism in Lane County government. And I was expecting, with all these, the Black Unity rallies and et cetera around town and these protest movements, that we would have a virtual packed house and we would have people waiting and raising their hands, virtually on our meeting, waiting to speak and telling us all the places that we have embedded racism into our Lane County system, because I would love to know and be aware of those places, because I guarantee you I will fight to make change if I'm made aware of one. Because I truly believe in the individual rights and making sure that every individual has the ability, well, I shouldn't say the ability, but the opportunity to maximize their potential is so important to me. And if there's something in our system that is preventing one group of people of maximizing their potential, I will make that change to take that away. Because as a believer in capitalism, it's important to me that everybody be able to maximize their individual potentials, because that makes the capitalist system work. If you're suppressing the potential of a large group of people, no one gets, improves their wealth and creates wealth. So I want to know where those problems are. But we had a total of 3 people speak up last night. And we had to basically cajole and beg people to raise their virtual hands and speak up. And we really didn't hear about any true institutionalized racism in Lane County government, with the exception of maybe that they're in our mental health system, people don't necessarily see people of color doing the actual treatment. And that, and that's a difficult thing to do. We have so few mental health providers, although yesterday we accepted a grant that's going to allow us to hire 10 more providers here in Lane County and set up our crisis center. So maybe some of those can be people of color. You know, we can be hopeful, but you know, we do pretty good recruiting, our recruitments, and we've got data to show this. We hire more people of color than our background population. We actually have racial and ethnic disparity in the positive direction in our hiring in Lane County. In fact, even in gender, more than 50% of our supervisors and managers in Lane County are women. So, you know, actually in the county government, that, you know, equity there is there. One of the things we have some difficulty with is retention. We tend to not be able to keep these people for long periods of time. And that may speak to other issues out in the community, not necessarily within Lane County government. So I was disappointed that I didn't get to hear how I can fix something. But it also raises the question for me, if only three people are willing to talk to an elected body where they get one-on-one time to tell us what they think is wrong, why are there so many people in the streets? And it makes me wonder, are the protests and the civil unrest have more to do with the election year than they have to do with actually having a grievance, a specific set of grievances that they can bring and discuss rather than generalized accusations? And I think that's where some of this falls apart. And I would love anyone that has a specific example of how we've institutionalized racism in Lane County government to bring that to me, because I will do everything in my power to eliminate that problem. Because I believe in the individual. In fact, I don't accept the false concept that there's more than one race other than the human race. It's a false construct. When you look at our DNA, there is almost no difference between humans, no matter how wildly our physical appearance on the outside of our skin is from person to person, and our stature, or maybe even our nose. We are so close together genetically, it's not funny. You know, a few different sequences can change, you know, how dark your skin is or how big your nose is, how tall you are. But thousands and thousands and millions of other sequences are exactly the same from human to human. We're all one race. We should stop seeing people as of other races and know that we're all one, and treat everybody like Dr. King wanted us to. Judge us by the content of our character as individuals. As soon as you try and place people in a group, you're doing them a disservice. Every group is so diverse. How you can categorize somebody in a group and claim any, you know, true homogeneity is, I just don't understand. And make generalizations about people that are members of that group. What I hate about this whole, you know, politics of, you know, dividing us into groups, you know, try and generalize a group and make them the victims and then see if politicians can just defend that victim group. It defies logic. I believe in the individual, and I want all individuals to be successful and living out to their highest potential. And I will help remove the barriers to the opportunity to realize that potential. I will not, though, rig the system to try and get equal results. You know, what's interesting is, I think was Thomas Sowell tweeted out today something about how can we expect equal results when a pair of twins growing up in the same household may not have equal results? You know, that somehow or another, governments and outside entities are going to enforce equality of outcome. You know, that's this difference, and that something that comes into the conversation is how people define equality versus equity. And sometimes that definition of equity slides from the true definition of equity to equity of outcomes. And having to treat people differently to assure an equity of outcomes, which I just, you know, that's not where we should be. And you know, right back to, you know, true equity is you know, having, you know, equity of opportunity, equity of access. You know, and sometimes you do need to do things a little bit different to get equity of access. You know, having things like bilingual, you know, medical providers, there's equity of access to people that, you know, English may be a second language. You know, that's a little bit different than equity of outcome. Start getting an equity of outcome, and then you start trying to suppress through institutionalized suppression people that are high performing, and then try and somehow or another prop up other people that may not be taking advantage of the opportunities offered to them for whatever reason. But you know, it was interesting to see us get just three people last night. And I'm hoping that maybe the next time the board does this, that our leadership either does a better job of advertising it to the folks that are, you know, so concerned about racial institutionalized racism, that we actually get some meaningful input, or there's some other platform utilized than trying to hold a board meeting and asking for people to come speak online about this. But it was a poor meeting last night and did not come out well. But, you know, you can always call into the Bo's Nose Show anytime to give me your suggestions on how we should fix any sort of, you know, racism that's institutionalized in Lane County government. 646-721-9887. Again, 646-721-9887. Just press 1, let me know you want to get in on the conversation. So throwing some pretty big topics out there around, you know, COVID and COVID response and the e-board. And, you know, it's just that racism, race theory, juvenile justice system, the protests versus what we're actually, you know, people that actually want to solve problems. You know, but I want to get to some other things. You know, one of the things we did yesterday was vote to join the County Climate Coalition. Woo-hoo! Fortunately, there are no dues to join it. One of the things that this kind of makes us a part of is a group of counties that basically is objecting to the fact that we're not part of the Paris Climate Accord. And it's really kind of a group that was formed to protest that in some ways. And they're supposed to also be sharing ideas about how we can all, you know, reduce our carbon footprint, which I don't object to because it generally means we're saving energy. As long as they're not miscounting how they reduce the carbon footprint, like not counting things like the cradle to grave carbon footprint of a windmill. But, you know, and as Santa Clara County was the initiator of this down in California, as California has experienced brownouts several evenings in a row because they forced their system to go green, and they don't have enough spinnable power for their peaks, and they keep browning out their systems. You know, we're joining that coalition at Lane County. But, you know, I just want to address one thing. The Paris Accord is a horrible treaty if you really wanted to reduce carbon output globally, because it basically holds China, India, and Pakistan harmless as far as carbon emissions go. It basically didn't require any target reduction for China and only required them to invest a certain amount of their new investment in energy, 20% in green energy over the next so many years. Whereas the United States had to hit a certain reduction in carbon output by a date certain. So we were going to have to basically turn back our economy in the United States while China could keep continually increasing their carbon output. And they have under the Paris Accord. Their carbon output has increased every year, whether you look at it on a total per tons or a per capita basis. Every year it's been going up since the Paris Accord. It's a flawed document that will not achieve any reduction in global carbon output, because what they're requiring of some of the Western cultures in reductions is counterbalanced by the increases they're allowing in China and India. So, not sure why we're signing on to the County Climate Coalition. So the one thing the good thing we did do yesterday was we did accept that impacts grant. And I just have to say, this is a continuation of Lane County's consistent work on mental health. And I keep getting a ball. And, you know, we have for a long time had a long focus on trying to do what we can with our limited resources here in Lane County to deal with the issue of mental health and its cross-section with homelessness and crime and the criminal justice system. You know, we are the now national model with CAHOOTS. CAHOOTS started here in Lane County and was expanded with Lane County Human Services funding. You know, the second ban and the expansions of CAHOOTS have come through our Human Services Commission and joint funding from the county and the city of Eugene. So, you know, as you look at that diversion and response. Now, I've talked before, CAHOOTS depends on having the police there to back them up. You can't have CAHOOTS without Eugene police there. And talk to any CAHOOTS worker, and you know, street response worker, and they'll tell you there's multiple times they've had to call EPD in on a code 3, lights and sirens, to help them out. They can't handle everything with social workers. But they do handle a lot, which keeps people out of the criminal justice system, and it's cheaper for you in the long run to pay for the CAHOOTS van than to book somebody into the jail. And the jail's really not the place to put them. But many years ago, we made a commitment here in Lane County to put mental health workers in with our medical staff at the jail so we could do mental health assessments and try and keep people on meds or get them back on their meds and help them out with the jail, because the jail is a tough place to be if you're in mental health crisis. I mean, the lights are on 24/7. There's loud and clangy doors, everything else. You know, it's not a great place to be. Not a lot of natural light, although we did change and moved a lot of the folks into an area that is much less restrictive and has much more natural light that are having mental health problems and trauma and PTSD sufferers, and we've done a much better job with those folks. So we even have focused in the past on trying to to help folks once they're involved in the criminal justice system deal with their mental health issues. And, you know, we just over and over again have made sure that we're doing what we can in Lane County to help people with mental health. You know, oops, I'm not sure what happened there. And, you know, we managed to put mental health providers in our physical health clinics right in the same teams in our, you know, federally qualified health clinics, so that if somebody is exhibiting mental health issues, there's an immediate handoff. And in dealing with, you know, cases and the case meetings, the mental health providers are involved that, you know, could that be a mental health issue and not necessarily a physical health issue? And we embedded that years ago, about the same time we moved mental health providers into the jail. And shortly thereafter, we actually started something we called our 23-hour crisis center, because we couldn't in this center hold people more than 24 hours, because then it gets into a different level of mental health providing. But we gave a place for the CAHOOTS people to take somebody maybe to de-escalate for a while before they could get released, rather than the emergency room at the hospital or the booking at the jail. So we opened that 23-hour crisis center several years back. And we managed, you know, to pilot and implement treatment courts into our justice system, where folks, you know, our mental health treatment court and our veterans court and our, you know, property, you know, felony property crimes, downward departure treatment courts that are dealing with addiction and other mental health issues, those courts get to that mental health. And, you know, we deal with this all throughout our criminal justice system, even to the point where our parole probation officers are trained in helping people work through cognitive behavioral therapy and changing how they solve problems and think about problems differently. And also in trauma-informed care, because they understand a lot of the folks that they're supervising not only have committed a crime, they may actually have been victims of crime too, particularly women. In fact, we have parole officers that have been trained and are gender specific and only supervise women, because almost every woman that is involved in the criminal justice system has been a victim of crime and trauma. So, you know, from start to end, Lane County has been a leader in trying to implement, you know, mental health. And we got this diversion grant from the state to try and prevent people from going into the state hospital system. And what we're using that for is to set up a crisis center that will go beyond 24 hours, where we'll be able to keep people several days, and also to expand our street outreach to try and get people, you know, into some of these crisis, into these treatment systems, and then into more stabilized situations, so they're not out on the street and needing CAHOOTS to respond to them. So that grant is allowing us to hire 10 more people into our mental health system in Lane County. And it's just a good thing, and shows what great work our staff is doing, that the state gave Lane County that grant so we can get this program going. But, you know, once again, it's, you know, we're having to go to the state for money, but at least in this situation, they recognize the good work local government is doing that state government can't do, because we're the ones on the ground. So looks like we're getting out of time here on the Bo's Nose Show. We're also running out of shade, too, so it's getting a little bit warm sitting out here in a dark shirt. And Piper needs a ball thrown, and she also needs her dinner. So one more time for Piper there. And we'll be back next week with the Bo's Nose Show. Hopefully we'll have something more uplifting to talk about. Maybe we'll, you know, that grant for more mental health folks. We'll have some really good things we can talk about on the Bo's Nose Show. We'll be back next week, same time, coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira. Have a great week.